JJ threw it into double coverage to Coastal Loveland, a freshman, and he mossed them both. And it's like, sheesh. You know what I mean?
You're listening to the Big House Bleachers Podcast.
Welcome to episode 11 of the Big House Bleachers Podcast. I'm Michael Smeltzer. I'm here with Matt Hartwell. Matt, did you pick up any new hobbies this week? There's no Michigan football. I mean, it's like I'm trying to figure out what to do with myself over here.
I didn't pick up any new hobbies, man, except just waiting for this football to come. I mean, we got a long few weeks ahead of us because I didn't do well this week.
Spoken like a real fan, right? Like you refuse to even integrate anything other than Michigan football into your life until we've secured the natty, right? We're just all energy and focus is on securing the national championship right
all
now.
Energy and focus is absolutely on the national championship. I'm honestly like struggling. Michigan fans, as you know, my friend, obviously we have the tendency to look ahead to the bigger games. So I'm already hoping for the natty. Obviously, we got to get through a very, very extremely tough matchup with TCU first. But I am sniffing greatness, and I'm hoping that it arrives pretty soon.
Yeah, and we've got a few weeks of no football until we play TCU. And so we're definitely going to preview the TCU game, but I think we'll save that for a week or two down the road since we've got a few weeks to talk about some other things. So for everybody that's listening, thank you for tuning in. We're definitely going to get into some TCU talk before that game. But really to lead the show off, for me, and I know for you as well, Matt, because you brought it up, one of the biggest, you know, most emotionally driven, most powerful stories of this year was the story that they did on Demetrius Walker, right? Michi is what we all know him as. And for those of you that don't know, Michi passed away just a couple days ago. And it was really sad news because Demetrius Walker, Michi, was a diehard Michigan fan, a high school standout football player that dreamed of playing football at the University of Michigan. And most of our listeners probably saw there was multiple specials this year on him, and Harbaugh brought him into a practice and they let him score a touchdown, and it was actually I consider that the first touchdown of the Michigan season. And so to me, this whole season started and now is ending with talking about Demetrius Walker. And I just wanna, give my condolences to his family, but also to the whole Michigan nation, because he became such a large part of our season. And I'm grateful he's gotten to see us go 13-0. And I feel like he'll be looking down on us in the playoffs, and he'll be that 12th man for us moving forward. And so obviously football is not the most important thing when it comes to these situations, but clearly football was important to Michi. And so we want to honor him by talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a diehard Wolverine through and through. I mean, regardless of if he played for Michigan or any team, you know, that story that they did on him at the beginning of the season, just so gripping, so emotional to watch just as a fan of the game. And of course, as somebody that bleeds the maize and blue, because just like you said, I mean, he was very passionate about like Michigan being his dream school. And, it's almost like a loss to everyone. Obviously, a lot of people didn't know the guy personally, but he touched a lot of people with content that was put out about him recently and his battle with cancer and how he fought hard, you know, for his family and his son. So the whole world can definitely learn a lot from Michi, and forever go blue for Michi.
Yep, go blue for Michi. Another thing that made the news cycle this week was our two senior captains on the offensive side of the ball. I've never seen anything quite like this, right? Where you have your two offensive senior captains. Both of them actually went out with injuries this year. One, of course, being Cade McNamara. And it looked like his job had been permanently taken from him anyway by J.J. McCarthy. And then, of course, you have Eric Aull, whose job was not taken from him, but he went down with an injury. And then Michigan still found their way in the playoffs with both of their senior captains going down to season-ending injuries. But the news this week was both of them entered the transfer portal. We already knew about Cade. And Cade McNamara committed to Iowa. I think that's a great fit. We'll start with Cade before we get into the Eric Aull thing, because there, you know, there's a little bit of controversy with how this whole thing played out. I don't lean into that stuff too much. I know fans get really riled up about this stuff. To me, these are college kids. They, you know, they're going to say some things that maybe aren't the smartest things to say, and they're going to do some things in a way that a 20-year-old kid is going to do some things. And so I give them the benefit of the doubt in most cases, but. Cade was seen on a podcast, and I only watched the short clip of it. I didn't watch the long clip, but did you see the podcast with Jordan Palmer, his quarterback's coach? Did you see a little bit of that rant from of course, this is the brother of Carson Palmer. Did you see that?
Yeah, I watched it for a little bit. You know, I didn't watch the entire thing. I didn't break down every little bit of what he said. But yeah, I did see it.
And so to fill everybody in, what I'm referring to is Carson Palmer, who is Cade's quarterback coach. So you would expect him to have Cade's back. It makes sense that this guy has Cade's back. Was on a podcast. There's a video clip of it. And Jordan Palmer's basically, you know, he's saying, he's basically alluding to the fact that Cade's job was taken unfairly, and that the other guy, right? The other guy, that's what he calls J.J. McCarthy in this instance. The other guy, you know, kind of was unfairly getting reps above Cade and fumbled against Michigan State last year. And, you know, and the thing is I got no problem with Jordan Palmer going to bat for Cade McNamara. But the thing that's rubbing everybody the wrong way is Cade was on that podcast. He was sitting right there with this rant going on, and it was pretty obvious to tell that these were Cade's feelings that you know, had already been spoken about and established between Jordan Palmer and Cade McNamara. Because otherwise, Cade wouldn't, I don't think he would be sitting there quietly while this rant was going on if he didn't feel that way. And so that's what's got fans kind of rubbed the wrong way is, you know, I think we can all just clearly state that Cade McNamara had his job taken from him fair and square. He's a really good quarterback, but we just happen to have a great quarterback waiting in the wings. And J.J. McCarthy took that job fair and square. And so sounds like Cade's a little bit bitter. That's fine. It adds to the headlines. It adds to the storylines. I'm not worried about it. I still love Cade. I want him to do well at Iowa. And if we see him in the Big Ten championship game next year, I just want to just – smash them, you know, just smash them in good, clean, competitive spirit.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, like I said, I didn't break down every bit of the interview. It was a pretty lengthy podcast. And after you watch like the first 20 minutes or so, you kind of get a lot of like the meat of what you were looking for what he was going to say about like the QB competition and his injury status and stuff like that. But, you know, there's definitely some saltiness there. You could tell that Cade was very uncomfortable about the whole, I mean, in my opinion, I felt like he was a little bit uncomfortable by what was going on, but still very much his feelings, just probably a little bit uncomfortable about the fact that it was being so openly spoken about in such a way. But a little bit less of a respect, I would say, for the way that Eric Aull handled things and his need to slight whoever it was he was slighting on the way out. But like you said, at the end of the day, these are college kids. They're going to have emotions about the way things were handled. at the end of the day, both guys were injured for the whole entire season. You know what I mean? So whatever transpired, you know, it obviously they're kind of probably not super happy with the situation that they're finding themselves in, you know, having to fight for their own credibility with all these emerging young guys, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, like, it just is what it is, you know? Football is a competitive sport where you got to earn the starting job, and unfortunately, J.J. McCarthy put on a hell of a performance this year, and you certainly can't say that he did not win the job.
And then you've got Eric Aull with this kind of mysterious backhanded comment kind of situation going on. And so Eric Aull announced that he was transferring. It was like immediately after we recorded the pod last week, because I actually said on the pod, like, oh, we're going to have Colston Loveland and Eric Aull on the same team. Like, I was hyped. And then I get done, editing the pod last week, and the headline comes out, right? Eric Aull tweets, he says, this is a quote, "Wolverine Nation, love you guys, but it's time for me to move on. I know some of you are wondering why I would leave, and the answer to that question is unexpected." That was like tweet number one. And so it's like, okay, he's showing love to Michigan. Not too bad, but like, what is he talking about here? And then he says, "Not everything and everyone are what they seem, and I learned that from my time here at Michigan. Sometimes you have to let go and do what's best for you and your family. Love you guys. Go Blue." So there's a "love you guys, go Blue" in there. So it's like, okay, you know, there's some love for Michigan as a whole. But, you know, to say not everything and everyone are what they seem, and I learned that from my time here at Michigan, that's a pretty mysterious comment. And I think it led a lot of people to wonder, what is he talking about? And more specifically, who is he talking about, right? So that's what's got people up in arms. They're mad. And you know what? Like, don't tweet at these guys, like, nasty, derogatory things. I saw a lot of people tweeting it at Eric Aull, and then even Eric Aull's dad was catching some heat on Twitter. It's like, guys, don't do that. Don't do that. I know sometimes it can be emotional when you lose a good player, but we don't really know what was going on behind the scenes, and this is going to happen. Imagine, like, it's a miracle this stuff doesn't happen publicly more often. You've literally got 100 college athletes and, you know, like 20, like, something coaching staff and athletic staff. Like, I'm surprised there's not more of this out there, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And 100% agreed with the coming after these college players for, you know, like I said, it may have even been something that Eric looked back on and thought, oh, I wish I wouldn't have tweeted that. You know what I mean? But unfortunately, the name of this social media game is that, like, if you feel some type of way and you put it out there, it's just going to be out there forever for the entire world to see. So I try not to read too much into it. Obviously, like, we're all very passionate about Michigan football and we all feel how we feel, but you know, you don't need to bring that upon the team or the coaches or sit around and badger the rest of the fan base about it. It just is what it is. We fielded an incredible team this year without either of them. You know what I mean? Obviously, best of luck to them. Michigan legends in their own right. I'm sure that that there'll be a significant battle with Iowa, because I feel that Cade does have what it takes to bring that team back to a Big Ten championship. So, you know, more will be revealed with how all that works out, but just leave these kids alone. It is what it is, and let's just all keep it moving.
You know, it's funny, just before we move on, I did see a quote or something, and I honestly, I don't remember the legitimacy of the source, and so This maybe was not said exactly like this, but apparently Cade said he committed to Iowa so he could prove that he's not a game manager. And I thought that was a hilarious thing to say, because Iowa's like game manager you, right? Like, I can't think of a more like game manager school to go to, but he's a competitor. I mean, like you said, I'm sure that we haven't seen the last of Cade, especially because he's in the Big Ten now. So I wish him the best. I wish Eric all the best. They were part of that monumentous 2021 team that will forever go down in history in Michigan football. And so good for them. Speaking of the transfer portal, I think more so than any high school recruits that we landed recently, I am most excited about the guy that we landed in the transfer portal. So, and I'll admit, you know, I watch a lot of college football, but it's tough to keep track of all of these guys. I didn't actually know who this guy was until after we landed him. But then since then, I've learned a little bit about him. But Ladarius Henderson is an offensive lineman, a 2-year starter from Arizona State. And he committed to Michigan. He transferred to Michigan as a graduate transfer. I don't think it's a stretch to say that Michigan is O-line U and that all the best offensive linemen in the country want to come to Michigan. This kid was a 2-year starter, and I think he has 26 starts under his belt. And get this, this is my favorite fact about him. He didn't start playing football until his junior year of high school. I love guys like that. I love that because what that means is that, like, he's just scratching the surface of how good he can be. And I'm so excited to add him into the mix on that offensive front.
Yeah, you know, you've seen it time and time again. And Jim Harbaugh just knows how to work this transfer portal with bringing in the right guys right in the right position at the right time. And just as to your point, he seems like another one of those guys that is going to be an immediate impact, but also a lot of upside and a lot of room to groom him into the elite defensive or offensive linemen in the country, just as Michigan has done year in and year out with not just the guys that they're developing in-house, but these guys that they're bringing in from the transfer portal. I was hoping you would touch on Mr. Henderson because that was some very exciting news. And also the 2023-2024 class is looking a little bit better after the last few weeks. A lot of movement, picking up commitments, not just in the transfer portal, but on the recruiting trail. So really excited to see that.
Yeah, a couple of the key guys that excite me that we've landed recently in the 2024 class we got a 4-star tight end, Hogan Hansen. And I don't know, like, something about me just feels like Colston Loveland had something to do with this guy committing. I have no like intel on that, but it's just I feel like some of the spectacular plays that Colston Loveland has made in the passing game recently. And then of course the way that we've utilized Schoonmaker all season long before he got banged up. And tight ends are really an extension of that offensive line too. And so you look at we've struggled to get some of these receivers for obvious reasons. Like 5-star receivers are not flocking to Michigan. But man, offensive line and tight end, like we're not having any trouble landing those guys. And to be honest with you, if I had to pick one or the other, I would pick O-line all day, because we've seen what happens when you can control the trenches. You can develop some 3-star talent at receiver and running back and you know, go undefeated. So yeah, that guy Hogan Hansen stuck out to me. And then we did land, so in the 2023 class, and this is our class that is, you know, been highly criticized. We landed Samaj Morgan, who is a 3-star wide receiver from West Bloomfield, Michigan. And so that it's good to see a little bit of talent trickling in that class.
And it's funny how you mentioned Colston Loveland's impact on this surge of tight ends, because another guy that they're picking up a lot of buzz on the recruiting trail is from Colston Loveland's home state of Idaho, Gatlin Blair, who's another 4-star tight end in the 2024 recruiting class. So a lot of positive movement, you know, I think just with on the offensive line and with the tight ends. You know, if Michigan can just continue to with this formula that they've been building with the blocking schemes of the tight ends, and also getting the tight ends a little bit more action recently. You know what I mean? It's only going to continue to get better for those commitments.
And I love that you brought up the Idaho recruiting connection all of a sudden that we have, because for me, I would much rather have a recruit from Idaho that's ranked in a certain position than a recruit from LA or Florida that's ranked in that, you know, that's similarly ranked, because these guys in California and Texas and Florida, they have so many eyes on them that they're highly scrutinized and highly evaluated. I mean, you can strike gold in a state like Idaho, because there's not Colson as many people looking at these guys, right? Right. And so you got a guy that, you know, may develop into a five-star level talent, but since he's living in Idaho, he's almost not going to get that recognition in high school. And so I'm starting to think that Harbaugh and his staff are just really good. You know, Harbaugh's got the kind of personality where I he might not even look at any of these recruiting rankings, like none of them. He might not even know like how many stars these guys have next to their name. I wouldn't be surprised if he just goes out there and just sizes these guys up and looks for some of the intangible qualities that he, you know, likes. And then of course Harbaugh's not the one doing all of the recruiting, right? Like we've got, you know, some really, really good recruiters on our staff, Sharon Moore, Coach Klink, Mike Hart is starting to get out there and get a little bit of traction. So it's cool to see these guys doing that. And I tell you what, I'm just going to move right into our What's the Deal segment, because my first What's the Deal actually has to do with recruiting. So, you know, What's the Deal just gives us an opportunity to ask what's the deal, right? Pretty self-explanatory. And for me, I'm not one of these guys that's highly critical, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. What is the deal with Michigan's 2023 recruiting class? So let me just clarify a little bit here. Like, I don't believe that the sky is falling. I actually just tweeted out this morning that I think this class is going to end up being a lot better than people think when it's all said and done. But, you know, we're back-to-back Big Ten champs right now, and we're bringing in the 20th best class in the country. I mean, it doesn't really add up. And so, Matt, what do you think the reason for this class's lower ranking is? Do you think is it NIL? Is it the Harbaugh interviewing with the Vikings? You know, is it that situation? What do you attribute that to?
You know, I honestly just think it's just the pursuit of some of these guys. You know what I mean? I think that Harbaugh is very much not going to overexert himself on big fish that are likely to transfer if they're unhappy. And, you know, we've kind of seen him been able to groom a lot of these 3- and 4-star athletes into players that are going to stick with the program for a good amount of time. You know, we have seen a lot of roster turnover obviously you credit that a little bit to the success on the field, but you know, we've been seeing very little movement from the roster, with the exception of people that are injured or people that we have no idea who they are. But I just think that that Jim Harbaugh and his coaching staff aren't going to just play this 5-star game. You know, they've been outward about saying it. They want guys that want to be at Michigan. You know, and the more NIL becomes prevalent, the more these recruits are asking about it, the less that we're going to see attraction from some of these big name recruits. You know what I mean? Obviously, you got like Will Johnson, who's like a hometown, you know, I mean, product, wants to go to Michigan. But outside of people that like grew up like loving Michigan, wanting to go to Michigan, that are 5-star athletes, I don't know if we're going to honestly see a whole lot of that just from a pursuit perspective from the coaching staff, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it does. And you know, we saw, I can't think of his name right now. What's his face that just a week or two ago flipped over to Miami, and it was pretty obvious Miami just dropped a bag on him. You were going to see a lot of that. Texas A&M and Miami and some of these schools that have no shame when it comes to the pay for play tactics. But it's interesting. Those are the schools that, you know, fell out of the top 25 this year, have 15, 16, 17, 20 people transferring away from the school. And then once again, Michigan, you know, following a year where I believe last year we had nobody transfer. And then this year we've only got three right now, which if you look at all the notable programs that have any transfers, like Michigan and Georgia and you know, really the cream of the crop, just have a couple guys and that's about it. So I think you're right. I think that it's more about culture. It's more about guys that want to be here. And, you know, that 2023 class is not completely set in stone yet anyway. You've got, there's some guys like Malachi Coleman and Nicholas Harbor that are floating out there with some like five-star level, you know, kind of talent. And then also you look at the transfer portal, right? Like we hit Olu last year, and now we got this Ladarius Henderson guy this year. So that seems to be, right? Like if you throw Ladarius Henderson, who may in fact, if he was reevaluated, may in fact be considered a, you know, a four or five star player. He's in that class now too. So I almost hate myself for even asking that question because I trust the coaches, right?
You're not crazy for asking the question though, because it is on everybody's mind. You know what I mean? But yeah. I think when you look at Jim Harbaugh, he's just a guy that likes to stick to what works. You know what I mean? And yeah. he likes what's working right now. He likes that none of these guys want to leave his program when all of these other big name programs that are paying mad money for people are losing these players. It's not something that he's going to want to do. And I think that his way of thinking is only going to deepen, honestly, as this whole NIL thing continues to unfold. They're going to go after players that they can run a cheat code on and develop and end up with a five-star player. The David Ojabos, you know what I mean? And the Yabi Ookies. And the Olu's, like they're going fishing and they're putting together master classes by the time the next season starts. So kudos to them.
Yeah. Again, I'm just gonna trust the process. I think we're doing just fine at 13-0, preparing for the college football playoff, while some of these NIL movers are trying to piece their program back together. So you know, I trust that. What you got for me? I know you got a what's the deal cooking over there.
I do have a what's the deal, and I mean, I'm just going to say in regards to the latest Heisman ceremony, you know, I just, what is the deal with the Heisman race, Heisman ceremony? What are we doing here at this point? Because you've got this award that's hyped all year, you know what I mean? Viewed as one of the most important accolades in all of college football to receive. And by the end of this, it's almost supposed to be a consensus award by the time the season is over. You know what I mean? I mean, in recent history, at least. And it's just kind of become, I mean, giving it to Caleb Williams, I feel like you got to feel like they just threw a guy in there to win this award at the very end just for the sake of winning it. You know what I mean? There was no talk or favoritism or anything going towards any of these candidates' way heading into the last week of the regular season. I mean, not any of these candidates, but you know what I mean? They threw Stetson Bennett in there at the last minute. His name wasn't even on the roster. And then you've got Blake Corum finishing in seventh in Heisman voting, a guy that's rushed for over 100 yards in every single conference game that he's played of the year, even took a snap in the Ohio State game, even rushed for over 100 in that game against Illinois where he went down, and you've got him seventh in Heisman voting. So what's the deal, committee? I mean, what's the deal, Heisman? What's the deal, Heisman ceremony? what are we doing here? And I just feel like they need to take a serious look at who we're viewing as the best player in college football that's going to receive this award.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback exactly what you're saying, because I had in my notes, what's the deal with Bryce Young being ahead of Blake Corum in the Heisman voting? Bryce Young was sixth. Blake Corum was seventh. And actually, all six players ahead of Blake Corum were quarterbacks. And so when you, this award is for the most outstanding college football player. And I get that the quarterback position is always going to be the most important position. And of course, we're going to see more quarterbacks in that conversation than anybody else, because they're the leaders of the team, especially on offense. But you're right, Matt. Like, you're exactly right. Something's wrong. Like, this is broken, because it has become, let's just invite the quarterbacks that are on top five teams heading into the last week of the season. Let's just invite them to New York and then pick the one that didn't screw up the most, right? And actually, Caleb Williams, I think the reason he won, well, there's two reasons. One is because with the Hendon Hooker injury and the Blake Corum injury, and then everybody else kind of stuttering, and CJ Stroud getting blown out and all that, there was really nobody else to put in there. And then also, they let the voters submit their votes before the championship games. And so I've heard stats as high as like 60% of the votes for Heisman were already in before the championship games. Like, that's wild to me, because those are some of the most important games of the season. So you're going to give out what is supposed to be the most important award. You know, you're going to basically let people vote for that before the most important games. Makes zero sense. The only guy that was in New York for that ceremony that actually looked like a Heisman contender the last week of the season was Max Duggan, right? That dude is, I mean, he's impressive. He looked like a freaking warrior out there. And I know that they actually lost that game, but that dude had Heisman written all over him in that Big 12 championship game. So, you know, yeah, I agree. What's the deal, Heisman? I will say, you know, since we're on the Heisman conversation, I thought Caleb Williams was going to get up there and just embarrass himself, because I don't really know. I'm not very familiar with Caleb Williams. I remember that he wrote "fuck Utah" on his fingernails, you know, before the Utah game. And so
you give it to that guy over Blake Corum, who's handing out Thanksgiving fucking turkeys. Come on, yeah. Now.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
He's giving out turkeys. That's his Heisman moment.
He's giving out turkeys to the homeless, for God's sakes.
On a bum leg. Injured.
On an injured leg, no less.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will say, I thought Caleb Williams did a good job. Accepting the award. He even said, I get to stand up here, but you guys get to be in the playoffs. You know, that was like a really, it was like a funny, but also like you could tell he really meant it when he got up there. And he, you know, I always try to look through the lens of that. We got to remember these guys are like 20 years old. I think Caleb Williams is 20 years old. So he got up and did a good job accepting the award. I just don't think that really represents what the Heisman represents. And so I agree with you there.
That is my only what's the deal. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's the only one. It's really the biggest one. I think a lot of us share that sentiment too. Let's move on to my new favorite segment. We haven't even done it a single time, but it's already my favorite. This is a segment that we call
Sheesh,
in honor of Donovan Edwards and his amazing Sheesh audio commentary that we've gotten now. So, you know, this is pretty self-explanatory too, right? You can do whatever you want with this. I'll let you go first, Matt. But what this week had you saying?
Sheesh!
Man, this week I got to give my first ever sheesh segment to Big Olu, right? I mean, Remington Award, Remington Trophy winner, Outland Trophy winner, Best center in college football. I've been saying it for a good amount of the season. I was so happy to see it solidified this past week. So deserving for Olu to get that. He's just been a monster in front of our quarterbacks this entire season, and just no more deserving player to get both of those awards than Olu Oluwatimi. Congratulations.
Quick question. Do you think that Olu is the best offensive lineman we've ever had at Michigan?
I don't know if I would say the best, but I mean, good. Just like just this offensive line, you know, it's hard for me to name a better offensive line. I even think they're better than last year. So
yeah, they are. Yeah, I don't think so. I just thought that'd be a fun question to ask. For me, my mind always goes to Jake Long, right? Like he was just a monster out there, and we've had so many good offensive linemen, but Olu now, in a single season, has put himself in, you know, that category, right? Like a handful of guys in that conversation. So that's interesting. I'm gonna move to the basketball game. For my sheesh. So Jalen Llewellyn went down with a season-ending ACL tear. That's our starting point guard. That is not what the news that you want to get.
Not ideal.
That's not ideal, right? Well, for a team that's already struggling, point guard, torn ACL, out for the season, that is not ideal. And then little Dougie Fresh, his first start ever as a Michigan Wolverine, true freshman. I think he's like 4'3". He's the shortest man I've ever seen. I'm just kidding, Doug. If you ever listen to this, I apologize already. He's 5'11", and it's fucked up because I'm 5'10". The dude's literally taller than me. He comes in.
They just look so small out there.
Yeah, he looks little, man. He looks little.
When they're like average height, they look so short.
Yeah, yeah. And he comes out, and I didn't know he could shoot like that. He drains like three threes. He comes and does this little up and under, like, you know, skip to my Lou, like finish. And not only that, he did the thing that I really, really was looking at, is he passed the ball effectively, right? He spread it around the perimeter. He got it to Hunter. There was one pass to Hunter that was just a bullet. The dude was amazing. I don't have the box score in front of me, but he scored like 16 or 17 points and was just a floor general out there. Doug McDaniel.
Sheesh.
I hope he can keep it up this year. I really do, because if he can keep playing like that, we might be okay.
And just him and Kobe. I mean, they just... The two of them in the backcourt, they were just excellent. Doug, if he can keep it up, he might be my favorite player this season, because he just looked like Chris Paul out there. You know what I mean? Just doing all of the stuff, driving in, making left-handed layups, shooting the three, like everything you want to see out of your Michigan starting point guard, he delivered. So great use of the sheesh there.
Yeah, and let's just talk about basketball right now for a second. I've got it at the end of the show, but let's just move it up since we're on the topic. Jalen Llewellyn was starting to find his rhythm. He was looking good. He seems like an excellent young man, and the injury is just terrible. And I hope, you know, he heals up and gets to play. I'm sure he'll get another year of eligibility maybe after this, and so hopefully he recovers fully. But just on the basketball side of things. This may, like, it's kind of like that Blake Corum situation, right? Like, this may have helped us in kind of a weird way. I know we don't have depth at that position now, but Doug is doing some things that Jalen wasn't doing. He's electric, right? Like, he's very quick and intentional and electric. He has a little bit of what we were missing when Frankie Collins transferred, right? A little bit of that energy that, and yeah, is he a little erratic at times? Has he turned the ball over a few times this season when he shouldn't? I mean, that's going to happen. He's a true freshman, but he's got that swag about him, right? He's got that swag. And then you mentioned Kobe Bufkin, long. I just love his perimeter defense. He really gives guys a hard, you know, hard time out on the perimeter. Hunter Dickinson's averaging nearly 20 a game. And that number may even go up in conference play, because I feel like we've been just getting a groove with him. And then we're seeing, you know, Minnesota is clearly not a good team. We just beat Minnesota badly, but we're seeing some of that, some of those other guys step up and getting a lot of minutes. We got to see Will Cheddar. We got to see Yo-Yo. We got to see, you know, Isaiah Barnes, Jace Howard got in the mix. And, the one guy that's not giving us what I feel like he can is actually one of my favorite players on the team, Terrence Williams. Terrence Williams seems to have kind of leveled out in this. And he almost seems, I don't know, just like uninterested out there. Like, have you noticed that with him?
I have, and it definitely seems like he's come under fire a little bit from the fan base for it. You know, just doesn't seem like he's meshing with the team in the same ways that he has in the past. I don't know. I just struggled with him a little bit. You know, he obviously had a great, beautiful left-handed layup in that game this past week, but still just not a whole lot to see from him that you would expect out of one of your more veteran guys on the team.
Yeah, and I love T-Will, actually. And early in the season, he was doing all the little things right when other guys were making mistakes. And so I'm not dogging on him. He just seems to still be finding his place in almost in like a Brandon Johns kind of a way, where it's like, it's like, come on, you know, like it felt like he was going to take a leap this year, right? And I think we're okay if Terrence Williams is a glue guy and he's the, you know, the fourth best guy on the team. Like, I think we're okay. But if we ever get into a position where Terrence Williams has to be like our main scoring option or something, then it seems like he is not really ready for that. And then we can't possibly move on from the basketball conversation without talking about Jet Howard. I mean, Jet Howard is the most pro-ready freshman I've seen at Michigan since the Fab Five, and I know that like is a big statement, but it's true. This guy is so smooth. He's comfortable. He's handling the ball. He's making sick turnaround jumpers, and every time he shoots a three, it's so effortless, and his shooting percentage from behind the arc right now is in line with Steph Curry. And that's bonkers if you think about that. Like, Steph Curry's the best shooter the game has ever seen.
Yeah, and I mean, he just adds such a level of depth to this team's shooting. We shot the lights out in that first half against Minnesota. He's a big part of that. He's a big part of that every game, whenever we've got a good shooting percentage on the board. But, you know, that is a guy that you cannot waste, you know, and this team has the makings of a really good team with a lot of potential. So really liked what I saw from them against Minnesota. I would like to see them play more of a two-half basketball game, you know what I mean? Because they did slip, not slip is a strong word, but they did get a little bit lazy in that second half, and Minnesota was starting to narrow that deficit a little bit. And, you know, I love the dominance I saw from them in the first half. I believe that Doug adds something totally different that this Michigan team really needs in terms of that burst and his multi-dimensional playmaking ability. So I'm really excited moving forward. I certainly don't want to say that the team is better without Jalen Llewellyn, but I think that we saw the makings of what the starting lineup may supposed to have looked like going forward.
Yeah, and then I almost forgot about Terrace Reed. I mean, that dude is a monster. He actually took it coast to coast in that Minnesota game, and he's like 6'10", just massive, looking like a monster out there, and he just went like coast to coast. And so the talent is there. The chemistry has been there against Pitt. It's been there against Minnesota. The question is, will it be there against Indiana, Purdue? Illinois, Michigan State, you know, like that's the real question. And so, you know, we'll see. We can move on to, I have a note to talk about some coaching changes. There's really only one that I want to mention, and it's not one, you know, it's not one of the Big Ten coaching changes. And so you can add to this. I know there's some other people moving around, but the one that just fascinates me that I think is noteworthy is Deion Sanders to Colorado, right? Have you seen some of these headlines? He comes into the, you know, team meeting, and he's telling guys to that if you know, basically if they're not going to get with the program, to just get out. And sure enough, right on cue, he landed the high profile 4-star. And how do you think he's going to do at Colorado? I personally think he'll be able to turn Colorado around quickly because of the way the transfer portal is nowadays. Deion Sanders is such a big name. I think we're going to see Colorado actually competing for a conference championship maybe next year based on this coaching move.
Absolutely. I think he's a character that's going to draw in a lot of noteworthy recruits, and we'll definitely see what that translates to at the Power Five level. But I think that that given NIL, given his just presence as a figure, you know, in football in general, I think that he's going to build that into a monster in that conference. So we'll see.
Yeah, any other coaching changes you want to dive into this week that kind of
How about the Brominator taking his talents over to Louisville and kind of a lateral move? What did you think about that just a few days removed from competing for a conference championship with Purdue?
Yeah, that's interesting. Whenever you see a move like that, you got to think that there's a personality thing. Right, like that, some sort of management thing that would just rubbed him the wrong way because, and I don't know what the contract was. I'm not tuned into that entirely, so maybe there was a money situation, but it kind of makes sense based on the way that you know the dude likes to throw the ball a lot, and I feel like Louisville, kind of recruits the level of talent that can do that, right? Like they're not gonna line up and jam the ball down your throat. So I think it's potentially a good fit. But yeah, that was strange, right? They competed for a conference championship, and I don't know, maybe Michigan just broke Purdue. Maybe that was it. Maybe he just realized.
I do want to just point out, I'm gonna find out one thing. Speaking of broke people, I had a Ohio State fan that was talking to me that was like the most honest Ohio State fan I've ever interacted with on Twitter. But the response from this guy, I mean, this guy was just broken. Here it is. This is from @BillKelly_24. You can tell by his profile picture, he's an avid Ohio State fan. He said, "Ain't watched a single highlight since we got our asses handed to us by Michigan. Honestly, I'm not as excited about the CFP as I normally would be. That beatdown hit different this year."
Man, this is something. Okay, we're gonna have to start doing this more often. I love that you just shared that. I actually saw that tweet, and it just filled me with so much joy. And if it wasn't a Buckeye, I would almost feel bad. Because I empathize with that feeling. Every year, literally every year until 2021, we went through that, right? It was just like that feeling of like your hopes.
He didn't even cross the M out or anything. Like he was just a broken man. Feel bad for this poor guy.
And they're in the playoffs, dude. That's what's crazy is they're in the playoffs, and this dude is like a dead man walking, just miserable. I love that, dude. That's hilarious.
I had to comment and let him know, like, I appreciate your honesty. We've been through it, so keep your head up, King. You know,
we should let this dude know he made the show. See if he'll listen to it and just die a little bit more on the inside listening to us make light of his situation.
Well, they want no part of a rematch with Michigan in that national championship.
Well, hell, that's a good segue, my friend, because something you wanted to ask on this show, and I'll let you ask the question. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the talking points that we wanted to discuss was who we would rather see in the national championship, a rematch with Georgia from last year's semifinal, or a rematch from a couple weeks ago from that ass beating to the Ohio State Buckeyes. Who would you rather see in the national championship this year, Mike?
I'm just going to answer, and then we'll dive in later after you give your answer. My answer is Georgia. I feel very strongly I would like to see Georgia in the national championship game. What about you?
I absolutely want to see Georgia again in the national championship game. I'll let you offer your explanation first.
All right. I have one of my reasons is just purely selfish. I can't take the emotions of the Michigan Ohio State game again, man. They're just, and luckily our quarterback doesn't feel that way. JJ McCarthy is like, bring them. That would be a blessing. Let's do it, right? He's clearly a stronger man than me because I just get so invested in those matchups that it's just such a whirlwind of emotions every time we play Ohio State. And we beat them this year. We beat them by 22 points at their, you know, at the horseshoe. I feel like that's enough. Now, beating them twice would be spectacular, and I will embrace it if that's what happens. But, you know, Georgia, it would be a full circle moment if we beat Georgia because, you know, we talked about those pictures of Andrell and JJ and Blake Corum and Mike Morris and Donovan Edwards. They stood around and watched Georgia celebrate last year after we got completely dismantled by them in the college football playoff last year. The guys, I mean, these were young guys. They stuck around and they watched Georgia celebrate. And there was all kinds of comments out on those pictures like, we'll be back next year. You'll see us again. You know, we're going to... But no, I mean, in the college football landscape, nobody actually thought that. Nobody was like, oh, Michigan will be back, right? The consensus was, this is a one-hit wonder. The SEC is just better than the Big Ten. Georgia is just better than Michigan. Well, how fucking sweet would it be to win the national championship against the same team that knocked us out last year? Because we're back. We're back against all odds. We're back. To me, that would be that full circle moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want the same things for the same reasons, because I, just like you, I'm sure, just like Blake Corum and JJ and Donovan and Mike Morris and everyone, I sat there and also watched Georgia celebrate that semifinal matchup against Michigan where they beat us down last year, you know, like... And we've already beaten the Buck. We beat them badly. We beat them in their home stadium. You know what I mean? Like, it's the greatest victory against the Buckeyes that I think I can possibly experience this year. And just like you, like, I'm so overstimulated by the time that game's over. Like, I have nothing to do with my energy except tweet obnoxiously for hours, apparently, because that's what I've been doing for the last few weeks. But I just don't know if I could handle it again. You know, the lead up, really, Michigan's game or Michigan's season can really only be compounded to one game of the whole year. So we spend this entire year up in arms waiting for this Ohio State matchup. Will we win? Blah, blah, blah. Will we do this? We did that. We did it in their home stadium. We planted the fucking flag at midfield. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't get more demoralizing than that. I mean, like, we could break them further in the national championship, and I will 100% support and have faith in the team that we will do so. And it's not even a place that I'm scared to play Ohio State, but I want that full circle moment against Georgia in the national championship this time, beating them. Because just like you said, nobody anticipated that rematch happening. Everyone laughed probably while those guys were standing down there on the sideline like, okay, Michigan's going to lose to Ohio State again next year and slip back into irrelevance, but that's not what's happened. And I think that this team has the best shot that they've had in a very long time at taking down an SEC heavyweight like this in a national championship game.
Yeah, the other reason I want to beat Georgia is I've got a good friend who was a former Georgia quarterback. So Quincy Carter, who was a Dallas Cowboy quarterback in the early 2000s, is a good buddy of mine. And every time we talk, you know how we were hitting Ohio State fans with the 42-27, like constantly? He hits me with the 31-13 or whatever the score to that fucking game was. He hits me with that every single time we talk. And I would just love, but I tell you what, if Michigan and Georgia match up for the national championship, we'll have Quincy Carter on the pod. He's a hilarious dude. Really, you know, brilliant story. And he took the Dallas Cowboys to the playoffs. Like, he was a big name guy. But I just want to rub it in his face because he's always telling me about that, how Georgia is so much better than Michigan. So that, I just have like a personal, like, you know, a little extra reason why I want to beat Georgia.
I would love to see it. Make it happen.
All right. Well, I tell you what, that's our show for this week. As always, it's great to see you, Matt. Thanks for carving out some time. I don't know if I'm going to like pick up knitting or basket weaving or something. I got to figure out what to do with myself. But Michigan basketball doesn't even play for another like 8 or 9 days. I don't even think we have a game before our next pod. So I'll just sit around and think about Michigan football like you've been doing you guys
actually, I think we might have an exciting juggernaut match against Lipscomb to talk about the day after it happens. Saturday we play?
Okay, next Saturday. Yeah. So
that Lipscomb. For some reason, they retract back from Big Ten play into Lipscomb.
Yeah, it's like a little warm up, and then we got North Carolina after that. I know that. So. Anyway, you guys can find me. I'm Michael Smeltzer. You can find me at WolverineChronicle.com. Follow me on Twitter at WolverineChron. Matt, where can people find you?
They can also find me on Twitter under my handle at Maze Crusader or my website, MazeCrusader.com.
And if you made it this far into the podcast and listened to me and Matt talk for an hour, go ahead and hit the subscribe button, because if you made it this deep in the podcast and you're still listening to us, then you're probably a diehard fan like us, and you need to subscribe to the Big House Bleachers podcast so you can get updates every time we upload a new episode. So thank you guys for listening, and as always, go blue.
Go blue.